You all set, Brandon? Okay, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm pinch hitting for Jason today, so hopefully I do his presentation justice, and I will try to answer any questions you may have. Jason's probably listening, so, and he can text me if I can't answer some of the questions you may have. So with that, we'll get start going through. All right, we'll try that again. So we're reviewing the 2018 specifications. This is year three of the 3 year specifications. So if you all remember, the fishing year for spiny dogfish begins May 1st and ends on April 30th. So this is the specifications that would begin May 1st of 2018 and run through April 30th of 2019. So this table has the specifications over the last 3 years. The commercial quota is declining somewhat over these 3 years due to the declining population biomass, but it's relatively minor. From the current year specifications to the 2018 specifications, it's a drop of about 900,000 pounds between those 2 years. Advisory Panel Fishery Performance Report was very similar to what they discussed last year, the same sort of results during that discussion, that landings are really being driven in this fishery by market and demand, and we'll see that when we look at the landings compared to the quota in a few slides from now. They indicated that the domestic market remains very small, and the export market still remains soft. Last year during the fishery, they had indicated that a new processor had gotten into the fishery, and staff had received a number of reports indicating that the price was being driven down by this one processor, causing a lot of other processors to hold on to dogfish and freeze them, hoping that prices would begin to increase later on in the year. That never really happened, so processors began to sort of freeze landings and really drop the price. And you'll see that in a couple of slides from now, particularly that started in late July and August, where prices really began to drop off and landings dropped off. So they continue to work on new markets and find opportunities to get dogfish to the markets. There have been a number of requests with two staff looking for marketing assistance, and Jason has been working with and talked to kind of driving them to different sea grant opportunities and state programs that may be available to get fishermen to help with sort of the marketing programs within for spiny dogfish. The AP had also, if you remember, trip limits had increased in August of 2015. There's a lot of discussion within the AP about what to do with trip limits, and there's some disagreement in terms of what to do, whether or not trip limits should continue to go up, if they should stay where they are, or even some have advocated for dropping trip limits again. But there's a general consensus that any changes to trip limits you should go slow with any changes that may be made. And again, this sort of processors restricting landings beginning in August with kind of not taking fish and the real drop-off in price during that time period. They also indicated there was a sense that the survey and the stock assessment didn't really reflect what they see when they're out fishing. And they had recommended that a new benchmark stock assessment be conducted to update the science and give a better picture of what might be going on out there. And you'll see sort of this theme come up when we talk about the SSC and the monitoring committee. So here's a figure looking at landings over time. And you'll see essentially from 2005 to 2011, landings increased quite substantially over that time period as the quotas increased. But since then, since 2011, landings have been relatively flat. So the quota has gone up quite a bit, but landings have remained stable. Again, trying to find markets to get these fish to. So that's kind of what's constraining landings, or market conditions versus the availability of dogfish. And so this is the plot that kind of gets at sort of the processors and where they were with holding back fish. The orange line is the previous year, fishing year, so that would have been May of 2016 through April 30th of 2017 is the orange line there. The blue line is the current year fishing year, so May 1st through the middle of September here. And you can see that landings tracked pretty well what they were in the previous year until around middle of, you know, early August, where Jason was getting a lot of calls that prices were, you know, prices were dropping and processors weren't really demanding any dogfish. So landings had really tailed off at that period of time, and prices haven't really changed since then. This looks at landings, where landings are occurring spatially. The figure on the left-hand side is landings from both figures are landings from January to June, so the first 6 months of the year. The slide on the left is landings from 2011 to 2013. One second.
That's what it looked like. Yeah, it could just cut me off.
And we lost audio again, so. Did the screen just go blank?
It just it just stopped sharing.
Okay. Did it help lost audio? Yeah, we lost audio as well. Stop sharing. That should be
okay.
Which one is it?
That
one?
Yep. Okay. All right, we'll try it for a third time. So, again, landings on the left from 2011 to 2013, landings on the right from 2014 to 2016. This is trying just to see if fishing effort or where fish being landed has changed over time. And generally, looking at this figure for the first 6 months of the year, there's really no difference between landings from 2011 to 13 to 2014 and 2016. The information on these figures is comparing dealer data and VTR data, and where those locations lined up is what's displayed here. So this only accounts for about 50% of the overall landing. So we're not looking at a complete picture of what landings may look like, but based off of that information, where that location information lined up between VTRs and dealers, there's really no change in terms of where the fish are being caught. And this is the same set of figures, but looking from July through December, so the second half of the year. And again, there's really no difference between where the fish are being landed in the earlier part of the time series versus what's being landed now. So the fish are where they are. Fishermen are still fishing where they have traditionally been fishing. So no real changes in terms of what's going on there. This is the Northeast Fisheries Science Center. They're spring survey. So this is female spawning stock biomass. You can look at the date. The very last data point is the 2017 spring survey. It's the lowest in the time series. This is swept area biomass of mature females. And again, so the 2017 is the lowest in the time series. But there was a lot of discussion even within the SSC about what that lowest value may mean. Was it a change in availability rather than abundance? And we'll look at some slides in a couple slides from now that kind of looks at the trawl survey. We can look at it spatially and see what might be going on. So maybe we just kind of, the survey missed some of the dogfish this time. And there was also some work being done by Mike Frisk out of Stony Brook, where he's similar to the butterfish work that was done, where they're looking at environmental and habitat availability and correcting the survey to account for environmental and habitat suitability, so kind of evaluating those things. We don't have the results of that just yet, but next year that information should be available out of Mike Frisk's shop, so it can help inform what might be driving the survey. Whether or not it's actual abundance or it's some changes because of environmental and habitat conditions.
So given sort of this low time series estimate that we do have for 2017, there were some requests to look at getting an update for next year by the SSC so that we can evaluate what might be going on with this low data point as we begin to set specifications going forward. So again, here's the spring survey looking at things spatially, and you can see particularly off of George's Bank, there's a real lack of spiny dogfish that were caught. The figure on the right-hand side is the 2016 survey. The figure on the right is the 2017 survey. And you can see the sort of yellow dots that are really lacking in 2017. So again, was it an availability to the survey at that time, or was something else going on in terms of abundance? So that was sort of the thinking in terms of that low time series, you know, estimate is somewhat concerning, but, you know, some more evaluation and work needs to be done to see what might be going on there. So the SSC had recommended no changes for the 2018 specifications. They did request an update assessment for 2018. Again, this is the last year that we have specifications in place, so we need some additional information to set specifications going forward. So getting an update assessment will be helpful in setting specifications for the future. The monitoring committee also recommended no changes and also supported a benchmark assessment in the not-too-distant future. There is some initial discussions of maybe that being on the 2019 schedule. That's all yet to be played out. But so maybe some update information on the stock in terms of our science should be forthcoming for dogfish. And that is it.
Thank you, Brandon. So there's no action needed to set any specs. We've already have specs in place. This is just a review of the data to support that in the SSC's decision monitoring committee recommendation. But does anybody have any questions for Brandon? John Borman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to add to what Brandon said, yeah, the SSC also would like to see a benchmark in 2019, and we are requesting an updated assessment for next year. But those of you who are around about 3 or 4 years ago, we did predict that the biomass was going to drop in 2016, 2017, just because of the dynamics of the population. So that is happening. But this drop was not only it wasn't in a particular year class. It was across the board. All age classes dropped at the same time. So we think it's an availability issue related to timing of the survey versus when the dogfish were vulnerable to the survey. So thank you.
Thanks, John. Dewey Hemmelright.
Thank you. Yeah, I'd like to ask Brandon a question there about I was wondering about the fishery, could it sustain a 30 million pound male only dogfish fishery? I was wondering if I could get some feedback from the SSC or the Science Center into if it'd be possible, you know, just looking at a 30 million pound male only fishery, perhaps if somebody was to do an exempted fishing permit to look at that. I think there's been some data about the possibility of papers, but I really haven't delved into it enough to get a handle on it. And I was curious to somewhere between, around 30 million pounds or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't speak to whether or not that is, you know, sustainable or what the implications may be for that. I don't know that yet. I do know, in talking to Jason, that I know that has been discussed, or to him at least, and brought up at different AP meetings in terms of the potential of having a male-only fishery. I don't know if that's been evaluated in any regards in terms of whether or not that can be done, but I know that sort of discussion has been brought up before.
Well, what has to be done further than discussion for that question to be answered? Is it something that needs to go to the Science Center? Or what entity to ask that question so it can be kind of parsed out to see if that's a possibility or not, further than just talking about it?
Yeah, I don't have an answer for you, Dewey, but we can put our heads together and try to think about what we might be able to do. Chris, did you? Rich Seagraves?
Yeah, to that point, this had been brought up probably it'd be 5 or 6 years or so ago. And Paul Rago did an analysis of sort of, you know, what sort of sustainable landings of male-only fisheries could occur for spiny dogfish. Basically, and we can dredge that report up, and it's certainly possible. The problem is that it had to be pretty clean, and that if you have any collateral mortality of the females, you quickly start digging a hole for yourself. So that was the issue. It's certainly on paper, the population dynamics analysis has been done, and it I think it's supportable. But if I remember correctly, don't hold me to exact words, but it's been looked at. And certainly, you know, the chair and the executive director could request that we continue to look at that. But the analysis has been, it's out there.
If I could, I'll get that paper from you, his analysis. Thank you.
Chris Moore.
Yeah, just to add to that, didn't someone do a paper? Wasn't there a paper that came out in the last couple of years on that issue? I don't think it was a Science Center report, but I think it was actually a publication. Maybe John knows.
Yeah, I had a PhD student at East Carolina University, Andrea Dalapia, who's from Italy, and he did a study around Cape Cod looking at males versus female abundance and vulnerability to the fishery, and decided that, yeah, it is possible to have a male-only fishery depending on time of day and location. It varies between males and females, but so he did get that published in the journals. But it was a confined area; it was around Cape Cod, and he didn't get into the enforcement aspects of something like that, which could be a nightmare. Thanks.
Thanks, John. Tony DeLernia.
Thank you. How would the I'm trying to imagine, how would you have a male-only fishery? Does anyone help me understand? I'd like to know, if you can describe it for me. I'm interested.
Just looking at some of the survey reports, I think there's places where you catch predominantly male-only fish, male-only spiny dogfish. And during some of the surveys, looking at some reports I've seen, so I think you would focus on that. I would look at it as being an exempted fishing permit if one wanted to or entity wanted to try that out. And given now that you have so much spiny dogfish females left over on quota, I know for North Carolina we only caught 500,000 pounds thereabouts. It probably left 6-7 million pounds on the table, and I expect other states did too. So you would look at that data and hopefully focus in on seeing what you could do for a male-only fishery, but I think it's right for exempted fishing permit if an entity or a company wanted to do something like that, and it would have stuff set out with your observers and different things like that. It's a big undertaking, but it's in the realm of possibility if there was some type of development for a male-only fishery that could happen. It might be specialized and it might be localized in a certain area during certain times of year. I don't know that. It would have to be some undertaking looking at the data.
So we're talking about the gillnet, set line?
I have no, I would probably say a trawl fishery.
Robert Riley.
So I thought that there was information that an assessment would have to be done, and I can't remember who presented that. There was a small presentation as part of the Spiny Dogfish Review maybe a year and a half ago. When this question came up, so you know, I think for Dewey, one of the things is that at least then it was said there'd have to be an assessment first.
And that's a good segue, Rob, into the recommendation for an assessment update by the SSC, and then the monitoring committee and SSC are recommending as soon as possible a benchmark assessment. So we're going to be meeting. The NRCC meets in a few weeks, and it's one of the goals of the NRCC is to work with the Commission and with New England to come up with an assessment schedule. And so this is a recommendation that we can certainly take to the NRCC as a request. I'll just look to the Council as to whether or not you want to make this in the form of an official motion, or should we reach this through consensus. If if there's no opposition to Warren and Chris and I taking this to NRCC, I think we can do that and try to get on the schedule as soon as possible for some new information to help advance where we go with this fishery. Any opposition to that? Okay, seeing none. Thanks. Yes, Peter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just so the council understands, when you hear that the processors are basically in a position where they're forced to freeze, there's two types of freezing. Our commercial freezers in the United States tend to hold their products at about 30 degrees Fahrenheit. Overseas and over in Europe, they hold them at what's called ice cream cold, and that's at 0 degrees. At 30 degrees Fahrenheit, dogfish still decomposes. At zero, there's no more decomposition. So that forces the price down in the U.S., just for clarity. Thanks.
Okay, thanks for that clarification, Peter. Is there anything else we need, Brandon, at this time? I didn't see anybody suggesting any changes to next year's specifications, so we will hold the line on that, and we'll be working towards setting future multi-year specs the next time we meet on this issue. Okay, so with that, we're going to take a 10-minute break so we can get set up for the next presentation, which I expect will take us probably till lunch. So refill your coffee, and we'll see you back in 10 minutes. 9:50.